Welcome to Raising Well-Nourished Kids, your go-to parenting podcast for everyday strategies to help you raise emotionally resilient, happy, food-loving kids.
Hi, I'm Georgia Harding, a naturopath, founder of the Well-Nourished Family Membership, and proud mum of two thriving teenagers.
And I'm Jane Faulkner, a practicing psychotherapist, the founder of Equine Assisted Therapy Australia, and also a mum of two beautiful, busy kiddos.
Join us every week as we share practical tips to set your kids up for healthier eating habits, body positivity, and a lifelong love of whole foods. Let's dive in.
Hey, welcome to today's podcast. We're going to be talking about what to do when your toddler or young child refuses to sit at the table to eat. This is such a common problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's something we've heard from you guys repeatedly. So, yeah, let's dig in.
Sure. So what's important to know is that developmentally around the age of 2 years old, kids start to push back and to test boundaries.
They certainly do.
It's said that from this age, kids realise that they're separate from mum.
Yeah.
And so from this age onwards, we often call the age of the will, as the child realises that they can say no and that they can assert some influence. This is really normal. Mm. It can mean they stop eating the foods they used to enjoy eating. They may want to run around with food in their hands or refuse to sit in a high chair or sit to eat. They kind of often want to do the opposite to what you want them to do, to be honest. It's like this new flush of power they have.
Yeah, so like we said, the age of the will.
Yes. Mm. So it can feel like all the hard work that you put into getting them eating well as babies, creating routines, getting them to sit at the chair can go down the drain overnight.
Right down the drain.
Yeah totally.
So today we thought we would talk about, as I said, this refusing to sit in a high chair or just a regular chair to eat, because it really is often one of the very first triggers for developing poor or picky eating habits. So it's something that really needs to be resolved, even though it doesn't seem like such a big deal. It's something that, yeah, we need to tackle, and I suppose a bit of a starting point, really, if this is when the picky or poor eating habits have developed for you and your kids. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Like I said before, it's a time when they are wanting to have some independence and some autonomy, which means autonomy means you want to kind of be able to do things for yourself.
Yeah.
And this is really healthy. So it's something as parents that we need to work with so that they can develop this sense of autonomy in a healthy way and still eat a good variety of food and still eat at the table. And we'll talk about how to do this in a minute.
Yeah. For most children, picky eating, it's just not going to go away unless parents really do work at it. This is a real make or break time, this not wanting to sit at the table.
Mm.
And two things will generally happen. One, parents get really firm on boundaries and will continue to expose kids to new food and persist in offering a good range of foods over time. And again, more on this a bit later. But the other option is that some parents just really do get completely disenchanted by this phase and just give up and cater to this picky eating behaviour, allow their kids not to have to be seated to eat, and that picky eating habits will worsen with time, and it will become harder and harder to reinstate those boundaries. You know, kids generally don't just grow out of picky eating habits. It's something that we as parents really do need to work on.
Totally. And I guess as a parent, boundaries are tricky. Mm. They can be, but I know for me, it was my biggest challenge.
So tough.
As a parent, they were not a strong point for me at all. But believe it or not, kids need boundaries to feel safe.
Mm.
So it's really important to remember that our kids are still developing on every level, mental, emotional, physical, and they don't have the life experience and knowledge that you do as an adult. So therefore, they need us to provide safe, reliable structure and boundaries that they can depend on.
Mm-hmm.
For all of us, boundaries are really important to help us feel safe. They help us to know where we stand with a person and in this situation. And when you think about it, social situations are full of unspoken boundaries. Like in restaurants, people sit at the table while they eat because generally everyone does this. Other people in the restaurant can relax and enjoy their meal. Without clear boundaries, we can start to feel anxious. We don't know where things begin and end. We don't know what's expected of us, and we don't know what's coming next. There's an awesome book I read when my kids were little called He'll Be Okay. It's by a woman called Celia Lashley, and she worked in prisons with young men, and she got really curious about why do some of these beautiful young men, why are they here? And she started doing research. So she interviewed hundreds of boys, teenagers, boys and young men across Australia and New Zealand. She went to boys' schools and prisons and youth justice. I can't think of the word.
Youth justice centers?
Yeah. And she interviewed these boys and she asked them what was helpful, what wasn't helpful, what they felt led to them ending up in prison, what was important from their parents. And overwhelmingly, a lot of the kids said that boundaries were really important. She was really surprised by it and that they really appreciated their parents setting these boundaries, and that because their parents set these boundaries, they felt loved by their parents. And when you think about it, like we were saying before, setting boundaries is really tough. Like you've got to kind of create the boundary, you've got to be clear on what it is, and then you've just got to work to maintain the boundary.
Broken record stuff, it's over and over. It's repetitive, it's frustrating, it's draining.
Kids push up against them, kids have amazing arguments for you not to have the boundaries. So,
and the boundaries are, it's like they change and evolve.
Yes.
Right throughout their life. It's not something you just set a boundary and then move, you know, and reinforce that one thing. They're constant and a continual part of parenting, aren't
they?
Totally. Not just, I mean, we're talking about boundaries in terms of sitting at the table.
Yes.
But, you know, obviously boundaries, gosh.
You're constantly renegotiating them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think as well, having teenagers, I think that my children are more accepting of boundaries as teenagers, when it is really important that they have good, solid boundaries, because there's so much risk for them outside when you're not there to kind of look after them.
Totally.
So you put boundaries in place.
Yes.
And I'm not saying my kids accept every boundary, they push back on most, but because we've had these, you know, fairly stable boundaries throughout their life.
Yes.
They really know how much they can push before they get the firm, no, that's not going to happen.
And they will have felt the long-term effects of the boundaries, right?
Yes.
That home life's pretty stable.
Yeah.
They kind of can predict it.
Yeah.
They feel safe at home.
Yeah.
They kind of know what's going to happen next.
Yeah. And it's interesting, like my daughter, who's an adult now, she's 19, has even acknowledged, you know, in her more lucid moments, not when she's cranky with me, but in her lucid moments, how much she actually appreciates the fact that her dad and I have had certain boundaries in place throughout her lifetime, even at the time, you know, when in her younger teen years, which are really challenging times, she would have hated me for those boundaries. Yeah. Now, as I said, a few years on, she actually respects me for those boundaries. So, you know, it brings that level of respect as well.
And making your child feel loved and cared for.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess for me, I want to say, if your toddler is pushing back and refusing to sit at the table, that it's really normal.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are wired to do that.
Yeah.
But we just wanted to, and we just wanted to focus on this because this is, boundaries is a massive topic.
It is huge. we deviate sometimes, deviated from where we were at.
No, not at all. But we wanted to give you some ideas to help bring them back to being seated at the table, which is really important for their safety and for building a healthy relationship with others and with food.
With food as well, yeah. So the first thing that I always think of when I think of bringing kids back to the table and ensuring that they're happy and enjoying food at the table is is, are you eating with them? Mm. You know, those family meals that we have spoken about in a previous podcast are so crucial for them to start engaging with food, and you as well as parents. And, you know, one of the key things that you can do to actually support the development of a good relationship with food and, as I said, each other as well. So, you know, really aiming and making that commitment as a family to sit down together and eat at a time that suits the toddler, definitely, and their capacity for hunger or hunger and tiredness. So, you know, not expecting your child or toddler to eat really late at night is really, really important.
Another thing to check out is the high chair comfortable? Does the booster fit at the table? Because they love being part of everything, and that can be a huge piece of them not wanting to sit at the table. Like if you're feeding them at a different time to the family and they're in a chair by themselves, and like I said before, where they want that autonomy, and those high chairs are restrictive, hey, they kind of lock them in. So it's just
needs to be ergonomically correct, I suppose, is the right terminology, isn't it?
Definitely.
But also, like, I remember when my son was kind of pushing back on sitting at the table, I actually found that removing the tray in front of the high chair and actually sitting him directly at the table made a massive difference, like that one simple little tweak. So, you know, exploring their seating and whether or not it's appropriate and whether or not they're supported, I think is super, super important for sure.
Totally. Yeah. Also kind of acknowledging that because they're little, their capacity to sit still, we need to build that capacity. So try to put them in the chair once dinner's ready to serve or dinner's at the table, totally. Where they're kind of not hanging in the chair for 10 minutes before everyone else gets to the table. I get that that's tempting because you've got them
100%.
You've got them kind of
restrained. And,
exactly.
You know where they are. You're not getting distracted by them disappearing on you while you're trying to, trying to cook dinner.
Also, you know, when they're young, if they need to take a break to move about, let them do that, but make sure they don't take the food with them and you keep the meal going so you don't take your energy off the meal. So they start to want to be where you are back at the table, and so they build that capacity to just stay at the table for the whole meal.
Yeah, and having that clear expectation that you only eat food at the table. Yes. You don't eat food when you're walking around. I mean, even my kids now that they're older, they don't walk around eating food. It's just not something we do. You know, I watched my daughter walk in the other day and all of her friends were eating out of the bowl as they were kind of walking, and she took her bowl and sat at the table and then started eating. And I thought, oh, isn't that interesting that that's just so ingrained in her that she just knows you just sit down to eat. That's just the way it is, kind of.
And so much better for our bodies.
And digestion, and digestion. And absolutely.
To kind of make food what it's meant to be.
Yes.
Something that you actually be with, and you kind of take the time to know how much and all of that.
And it's important, isn't it, that you know, toddlers are involved in the food, involved in the family conversation, you know, having that discussion even before they can truly converse, but talking to them about food and what it tastes like and what it smells like, and letting them squish it and, you know, get messy, and, you know, the whole process of touching and smelling is as important as tasting, isn't it? When they're little, especially.
The whole sensory
experience. Absolutely. And just encouraging them to use, obviously, cutlery if they choose to, because a lot of kids love to mimic what we do when they're little.
It's an ideal time, isn't it, to get these amazing habits in when they want to be like us.
It certainly does.
Something really important is, as the parent, not to have any distractions. Yeah. So don't have your phone on the table. Don't have it on silent in another room. Yes. Don't have TVs in the background. It's really important. I feel like an old fuddy-duddy saying it, but it's so – relationships are really important. And so
– and little ones get FOMO. You know, if they see even like a sibling, an older sibling sitting down, like in a different room doing something else, they're wanting to know why is that person not sitting at the table as well?
Yes.
And, you know, that is going to distract them ultimately. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. We're wanting as much as we can to keep supporting them to stay at the table and to feel...
And not be distracted.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Really important that you don't coerce.
Mm.
So with them sitting at the table more, you want that they have that clear expectation that when we eat food, we're at the table, we stay at the table while we eat dinner, and that everyone's clear on that expectation. Mm-hmm. And then when at the table, if they start moving around, then you reaffirm that kind of expectation and set that boundary that, because I know with kids they can test it, right? Like at first they get a bit agitated and they get up, and then you stay at the table, like I said before. But I can't remember whether it was one of my kids or where they just keep, they're like a little yo-yo then.
Yeah.
And so you just don't want to give that any attention at
all.
Yes,
okay.
You just want to come back to just don't even, I wouldn't even say anything. I would just be like something like, James, we're having dinner. It's time to be at the table. Come take a seat. And then I would probably just
make the conversation interesting would be what I would do. I don't know if that's necessarily the right thing, but I definitely start talking about something that they were perhaps interested in.
Yes.
We've said before, a past, outing or, something that we'd done that day that they found really interesting or really exciting.
Yeah. And just
one of their friends or a cartoon character, I don't know, making this up as I go along.
And maybe even you start engaging with another child or another partner where you're like, come on, you're welcome to join in.
Yes.
But you just kind of
don't
give any energy to the yo-yoing to and from the table kind of thing.
Because we have to remember that moving around and eating is actually a significant choking hazard.
Yeah.
So, even though we're discussing eating and, this being the foundation or perhaps a bit of a hurdle when it comes to picky eating habits developing, eating while seated is just so important for kids' safety. So if your child refused to sit in a car seat or to wear a seatbelt, would you reinforce that boundary? I think you probably would. Yeah. So I think that, as I said, that the risk, there is a significant risk with choking if a child's moving around with food in their mouths.
Yes, definitely. Mm. And I think this is important to remember when setting boundaries.
Mm.
Is the reason why you're doing it and the importance of why you're doing it.
Yes.
Because when you're in the thick of it and they are hangry and giving it their all in fighting back, it can be really difficult. I know for me, that's when I'd be like, oh God, is this, I'd forget
totally
why I was doing it. Yep. So it's okay to take a breather. It's okay to say, I'm getting really upset too, to your child, and I don't want to say or do something that might not feel good, so I'm going to go outside or I'm going to just take a few breaths. Always better to take a moment to regain your own regulation and perspective if they're really losing it about being in their chair. It doesn't mean you're giving up or you're giving in. It means that you're taking a break from conflict and you're taking a moment to regain your perspective, which is really helpful, and to regulate yourself so that you're able to think clearly again. Because when we start losing it, it's really hard to make good decisions.
Mm.
And I always like to remind people that your relationship with your child is the most important thing. So I think some nights... it's like a perfect storm, hey? They're tired, you're tired, they're hangry, you're trying to get them to stay in the seat. Sometimes I think you can be clear on the expectation, you can set the boundary, and also there are times where it's like, all right, we're going to work on this again tomorrow.
Mm.
It's remembering that parenting's a marathon, not a sprint, and you're building on things, and that nothing's worth ever saying something harmful or doing something harmful. Because I kind of want to empathize, that toddlers is generally a pretty difficult time. Mm. You're often sleep deprived. You're often worried about their well-being, worried about life in general, you know, finances, loved ones, work. So kind of wanting to remind you to be gentle with yourself and to remind you that you have years to guide and teach them. Mm. It's one step at a time.
Yeah.
And like we said before, just to keep in the back of your mind, why am I setting this boundary? Why is it important for my kid to stay in their seat? Mm. And just to remind yourself, well, one, it's a choking hazard. Two, at school and as they grow, it's kind of an expectation socially.
Yeah, and even when they're older and, you know, the time comes that you perhaps do want to venture back into restaurants and go out for a family meal and for it to be pleasurable, that requires your child to sit in a chair because the restaurant's not going to allow, you know, your child to be running around the table with, you know, waiters carrying hot dishes and so forth. So it extends beyond just that action of sitting in the table, isn't it?
Totally.
It is.
Yeah. And I think of a lot of these things, a lot of these social skills, it's like a muscle. We've got to support our kids to build them.
Yeah.
It's like it's a really unfair expectation to not give your child any of this work at home where you're kind of building their muscle for sitting at a table and for kind of having table manners and all these things that are actually really important.
Yeah. And like you said, even school camps, for example, you know, if your child doesn't know how to sit at a table and eat, they're going to find that school camp even more anxiety provoking, I suppose.
Yeah. Mm. Well, and then they get negative attention. Hey?
Yes.
And that's kind of painful.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's obviously projecting again into the future, but I suppose just to help you to keep in mind that it's, you know, like Jane said before, why you're insisting that they sit at the table is beyond just sitting at the table, I suppose. So, I think that's it for today.
Yeah,
hopefully, again, you've got something out of this. We'd love to see you next week. Enjoy. Bye. See ya. Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Raising Well-Nourished Kids podcast.
If you'd like to learn more about raising happy, emotionally resilient, food-loving kids, check out the Well-Nourished Kids program or follow us at Well-Nourished Kids on Instagram.
And if you've enjoyed what you've heard today, we'd really love it if you could take a moment to leave a review, subscribe, and share with a few friends.
Remember, it takes a village, and we're here to support you on your parenting journey.
We'll catch you next time.